Coming up, Trey Kirby from No Dunks coming on to talk about some NBA questions I have about League Pass darlings, teams trying to take the next step, and teams that nobody believes in. That's coming up right now with Trey Kirby. You can now watch the Kevin O'Connor Show on Yahoo Sports Network, our first ever streaming TV channel. The Yahoo Sports Network is available to stream on all leading FAST services. We're also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all of the shows on your phone or your browser. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We get a special guest today to talk NBA, Taco Trey Kirby. Trey, how you doing, man?
KOC, great to talk to you, man. You're looking great in your Dead & Company tie-dye. I knew it was the one shirt in my entire closet I couldn't wear today, so I'm happy to see you come through.
Yeah, man. I mean, we both got our tie-dye on. We both are veterans of seeing Dead & Company at the Sphere. Yeah, you've seen them, of course, many, many, many more times than I have. I have only once. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Let's talk a little NBA to start the show, though, because I want to play some categories with you here, Trey. I got three categories I prepared with some questions about players or teams within each category, and I want you to choose the direction we go. We got three categories. Those categories are: we got the nobody believes in us teams, we have trying to take the next step, and the league pass darlings or eyesores. Where do you want to begin?
How about nobody believes in us? Because it's summertime. This is a time to get excited about every team. Any team could be good right now.
All right, let's start off with the nobody believes in us teams, with the Cleveland Cavaliers, because the Cavaliers, they win 60 plus games last season. Then they get smoked in the playoffs. This offseason, they add Lonzo Ball. They add Larry Nance Jr. They lose Ty Jerome. They lose Isaac Okoro. Following everything that they did this offseason, Trey, has your confidence in the Cavaliers increased or decreased when it comes to their chances of winning the NBA Finals?
Winning the NBA Finals, I think it's probably about the same. I don't think I put them ahead of some of the teams in the Western Conference, most notably the champion Thunder. But I would say I'm more encouraged for the Cavs this year, maybe not because of what they did, but because of what happened around them in the Eastern Conference. Like you said, one seed last year ran through the league, really, until they got into the playoffs and things fell apart. But due to injuries to Tatum, Tyrese Halliburton, Dame Lillard going out and now going to the Western Conference as well, things have gotten a little easier for the Cavs. They're in a weird spot, though, I think, because nobody's going to buy into their regular season success at all. So they're kind of where the 76ers have been in the past couple of years. Okay, we'll see what happens during the regular season, but you got to prove it in the playoffs. So that's the tough thing for Cleveland and for their fans. They could win 65 games again this year. You know, they should have the continuity, the talent, the star power, the know-how. They're good on both sides of the ball. They were great last year. And nobody's really going to care until they're able to get to at least the conference finals. And I mean, the goal for the Cavs, at the very least, should be the NBA finals. There, we'll see what happens. But I'm encouraged to watch the Cavs this year. They've had a nice run as a team so far that's just going to keep building and building and building. The Eastern Conference being down definitely helps them. I think we're all kind of pegging them as one of the top two teams in the East.
You know, I think with the Cavs, the offseason changes. It's kind of a wash. You know, I mean, Ty Jerome was really good last year. Of course, he wasn't so good in the playoffs. But with Lonzo Ball, there's no guarantee he's even going to be healthy. And like, same thing with Larry Nance Jr. I love the guy so much. He's one of my favorite role players in the NBA, but like, he also has had a lot of health issues, durability issues in the past as well. So, you know, with the Cavs, like, the offseason changes to me are more just a wash. It's everything that we don't know with them, because last season, Kenny Atkinson hired as head coach. He replaces JB Bickerstaff, and the system changes were beautiful. Like, the team reached a new level during the regular season. As you said, they're the one seed. They run through the Eastern Conference and they look outstanding. And then it just all kind of fizzled in the postseason. And, you know, Kenny Atkinson, what he talked about after they were eliminated is he like juxtaposed the way the Pacers played with force and intensity and stamina for 48 minutes against them. And he felt like the Cavs were lacking that well, now, like, they have the system changes. Can they have the personality shift as a team? And that's something that I don't think we can get the answer to this offseason until we actually see the way they play during the season. But they played great during the season last year. So as you said, how much can you really factor any of that in at all with what we see in October through April when what changed in the postseason? Like what do you need to see during the season? Like, is there anything that they can show on an individual level or a team-wide level that would, you know, make you feel a lot more confident ahead of the playoffs?
I don't know that it happens this year, but I think the best version of the Cavs is probably a team where Evan Mobley is their clear-cut best player. He's already their best defensive player. He's maybe their second best offensive player. I would say third at worst behind Garland and Mitchell. And Mitchell is going to take up the majority of possessions. He's going to be the driver out there. Garland will be a handler, facilitator, scorer as well. But Mobley coming into his own is the way the Cavs really go to the next level. And you're totally right. The moves they made in the offseason are going to be helpful. I'm a Lonzo Ball fan, but he's unreliable, though he was pretty solid for the Bulls at the end of last year when he finally got back on the court. We'll see if that's able to maintain. Larry Nance Jr., kind of similar, right? Like, he's good when he plays. Sometimes he's going to miss a little bit of time, but I think it's the starters that really will take the Cavs to the next level, and the mindset has got to change, because when you think of the first run the Cavs had in the playoffs, they ended up getting punked by like an Isaiah Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson Knicks team who just crushed him on the glass. Their second go around in the playoffs, injuries got in the way and they weren't able to advance. And then last year felt a little bit more like their first playoff run where the physicality was a problem. But Mobley's growing into himself. He's getting bigger. He's getting stronger. I am still a Jared Allen believer, even though he has some missteps in the postseason. I do think that they can be a bigger, tougher team. And I think that that's exactly what Kenny Atkinson is talking about postseason last year, is that they need to be the tough team out there, especially when you look at the personnel they're playing. They got 2 7-footers almost all of the time. This isn't a team to ever really get beaten on the glass. They're going to be the big ball team out there. So I think Mobley taking another step and just going through time and time again the crucible of the playoffs and realizing what it's actually going to take to win. It's kind of like a last chance saloon for me at this point with the Cavs. We've seen it a couple of times go poorly the same way. So taking the next step is a combination of their young players getting better and their established veterans kind of going to the next phase of their career where they're using that veteranship, that toughness to come through in the biggest moments.
And I do wonder with them, is there a possibility for moves during the season? Because we do know Joe Varden had reported this offseason they had a lot of interest in Cam Johnson. Windhorst had reported that the Suns reached out to them trying to get Garland for Kevin Durant. So at a minimum, there were discussions for a big forward, some type of roster shift for the Cavs this offseason. And so if
like
Garland
a DeAndre
Mitchell,
Hunter type or something like that?
yeah, exactly. Somebody more like that, you know, another one of those guys. So I think with them, man, like they've already made another move this past offseason. Maybe they make another one and further bolster their chances. But overall, I think, you know, I'd slightly feel increased confidence in them because the first thing you said, the rest of the East is worse. Tatum is out. Halliburton is out. So I think naturally you have to feel a little bit better about their chances. On the other hand, in the Western Conference, it is absolutely stacked. But the Clippers did make a lot of changes this offseason. They lose Norm Powell. They add Bradley Beal. They add John Collins, Brooke Lopez, Chris Paul. And in the West, if you look at the finals odds for the Western Conference on BetMGM, the Thunder are the favorites at plus 160. The Nuggets and Rockets are both plus 450. And then the Timberwolves are plus 1,000. Clippers are plus 1,100. Lakers are as well. Then the Warriors and the Mavericks. Then the Spurs. Do you think the Clippers being the fifth highest odds in the Western Conference is too high, too low, or is that just right?
It's too low during the off season because that's one of the best times to talk yourself into the Clippers. I always get suckered into buying into a James Harden team at two times, like August to September, where we start getting pictures of Harden in the best shape of his life. The guy's in the gym like crazy. Look at these new moves he's coming up. I love that era of James Harden. And then I also love guaranteed the Clippers will go on a winning streak in like February to March or something like that. Everybody's healthy. They're really clicking on both sides of the ball. They've got a lot of depth. They've got a lot of players who can put the ball on the floor, get their own shot. They've got good, versatile defenders as well. So they'll rip off a whole bunch of wins, I'm sure. And we'll just be talking on podcasts. Do you buy the Clippers? Do you buy the Clippers? I will say yes. And then I'll feel like an absolute clown when it's May and we're not sure if James Harden is going to be performing well. We're not sure if Kawhi Leonard is going to be on the court, but they've done a really good job of having an awesome, basically 1 through 12. Some of their 9, 10, 11, 12 guys would be much higher in the pecking order on some of these other teams. I think it's probably good to have that much depth when everybody on the team is about as old as I am. They definitely are tilted on the veteran side of things, but as we've said with many of James Harden teams, as we've said with a lot of Kawhi Leonard teams, if everybody's healthy, they've got a really good chance. I'm in, at least for right now, KLC.
You know, look, I think fifth with them is fair. I would not go any higher than that for the Clippers. I definitely would not put him ahead of the Thunder, the Nuggets, or the Rockets. I think the only team you could argue is like ahead of the Timberwolves, but the Timberwolves have also been to two Western Conference Finals in a row. You know, I would not put them ahead of Minnesota. I think I'd put them behind the Lakers slightly, so sixth rather than fifth. But ultimately, I've been in your position before, Trey, where I believe in the Clippers, and I've always been a Harden believer as well. I've always been a Harden believer.
Yeah, we're dumb guys who are on the internet too much, KOC. But once you see Harden, it's like, whoa, he's going to lead the league in assists? How amazing is that? He's shooting 40%. Oh, he has 40 points in game one of the playoff series like he always does? You can mark him down for 11 in game six with another 8 turnovers. But it's fun to buy into the Clippers because, man, if it happens, can you imagine not just James Harden and Chris Paul getting rings, but an actual Clippers championship? Doesn't sound like something that would really happen when you say it out loud, but it's fun to imagine.
I mean, it's like the most Clippers team. You know what I mean? It's all a lot of like rejects, people that nobody has ever believed in or always doubted or said we'll never get a ring. Like it's a bunch of guys like that. Even Bradley Beal, he's like the odd one of that crappy Phoenix situation. You know what I mean? Like he's the one they all wanted to go that was getting the blame. So, I mean, look, I think with this Clippers team, they're old as well. And this is like a young league. Could that be advantageous for them? I don't think so. I don't think so at all in this current state of the league, especially you look at the other young team like the Thunder. They literally just won a title. So now you can't just say they're young anymore when they have the experience as well. I think with the Clippers, man, the reason why I am optimistic about what they can be is because of their front court flexibility. Last year and in recent years, they've been solely reliant on Ivica Zubac as the center. Last year, Ben Simmons is their backup center. I mean, like now they have Brook Lopez. They have John Collins. They can play with two bigs. They can play with one big. They can play fast up and down with John Collins, or they can slow it down with Lopez and Collins out there. They could go jumbo bigs if they really wanted to do something crazy with Lopez and Zubac. They also drafted a guy in the second round, Yannick Kona-Niedenhauser, who's like a big lob threat, and I don't expect him to play much this year. Point being, though, is they have so much flexibility in that front court that's going to help shape their lineups like we saw with OKC and Minnesota and Boston in recent years and so many of these high achieving teams. I think when it comes to constructing a lineup, the foundation is your bigs and what you choose to do there. And the Clippers now have flexibility that, you know, Ty Lue just frankly wasn't able to have in recent years. And I think that makes them more interesting to me as a legitimate contender rather than in past years where it just, besides Zubac, there was nothing. And Zubac is a great player, but you need more guys behind him and more flexibility in a front court around a guy like that. Do you think is there any truth in that, Trey, or am I just you know, really just pulling at strings here trying to figure out a reason to feel good about the Clippers?
I'm actually 100% with you. It's the depth era in the NBA. Ty Lue has been a great coach for the Clippers. I can't believe they won 50 games last year with all of the injuries they had, and like you're saying, not a ton of depth. Now at the very least, they're too deep at basically every position, and like you explained, a lot of these guys Collins, Lopez, Zubats. You could throw Derek Jones Jr. in the mix as a small ball five even. These guys can all play with each other in different combinations. So they've got a lot of versatility. And that's why, for me, I don't know if it's a hot take, I've got them ahead of the Lakers, at least heading into the season. I'm trying to learn, KOC. You know, last year we saw a Pacers team who maybe doesn't have as much high-end talent as some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference. We saw them go to the NBA Finals, go to a Game 7, largely on the strength of their depth. And I think that we're seeing a lot of success for teams that have multiple players they can go to in emergency situations. It makes it easier during the regular season. It gives their coaches a lot more options in the playoffs. So when you're comparing the Clippers and the Lakers, you know, the Clippers are the older team. The Lakers do have, at the very least, Luka, you're taking ahead of everybody else on the Clippers. LeBron, I don't know if he's ahead of Kawhi at this point or not, but you could say the Lakers have the top two. But I think after that, it's maybe the next six or seven guys are from the Clippers. So I think the depth is what I'm banking on for the Clippers. And, you know, it's got to hit right sometime, right? Right? I mean, what's going to happen first, KOC? A championship for James Harden and Chris Paul, or Ben Simmons switches hands on his jumper?
Maybe nothing. Maybe the end of the world.
Yeah, it's a push. That was none of that's happening.
I think the championship is more likely because Ben Simmons for years has had people in his life trying to get him to switch hands, including his former shooting coach in Philadelphia, John Townsend. They experimented with it. There's video footage of it. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. And also, he's near the end at this point anyway, unfortunately, as sad as it is to say. But he hasn't signed with anybody yet. The offseason is so dead right now. Ben Simmons hasn't even signed with anybody yet.
The offseason is so dead right now, we're not even getting Jonathan Kuminga rumors anymore. I got excited about a Nafali Dante move. Can you believe it? A restricted free agent actually switched teams.
And we'll be right back after this break. Now, all right, next category here. Trying to take the next step or League Pass Darlings, ... eyesores.
Hit me with the League Pass Darlings.
All right, let's start off with your Chicago Bulls. Your Chicago Bulls.
I was worried they were going to find, they were going to be in this zone.
Back in February, AKA the Bulls GM said, quote, "I'm happy where we are." At the time, the Bulls were 22-30. They were in 10th place. I thought it was an absolutely comical comment by AK to say such a thing. And, you know, the Bulls, I'm sure he's still happy with where they are. Trey, obviously different standards for the Bulls front office compared to you as a Chicago Bulls fan. What's something, one thing realistically that's got to happen this year to go down as a good year for your Bulls, for you to feel like you're happy with where they are?
That's a great qualifier. For me to feel happy is a lot different than, you know, the Bulls front office feeling happy, because I think it's pretty reasonable that the Bulls could end up 10th place in the Eastern Conference. And look, if AK was happy in 10th last year, I think he would be happy in 10th once again this year. I ran into a Bulls fan at Summer League, and even at Summer League, this Bulls fan was like, "We love the 10th seed." And that's exactly what it feels like in Chicago. Yeah, I do want to see a seventh championship before I die. You know, it happened so long ago, I'm forgetting what it was like to be a 14-year-old. But the main thing I want to see from the Bulls this year is a step forward for Matas Buzelis. I think that was the most encouraging thing about last season for Chicago, is that after the Zach LaVine trade, Josh Giddey got a lot more control of the offense. They really hyperized the pace. They were playing up and down, and Buzelis got a lot more opportunity. He showed himself to be a really solid defensive playmaker. He's a really good play finisher and an awesome transition player. The Bulls are definitely focused on being a transition team, which plays to Buzelis' strengths, but I'd also like to see him be able to create a little bit in the half court. You know, he's got athleticism, he's got length, he seems to have a handle, and he plays really tough. It's just a matter of figuring out how to score against guys that are easily outweighing him by 40 to 50 pounds. You know, he's a skinny dude despite playing with some ferocity. So I think an encouraging sophomore season from Matas Buzelis is like the main thing I'm watching for from the Bulls this year.
Yeah, I think with Buzelis, it was encouraging overall, his rookie season for sure. To your point about shot creation, according to Synergy, last year he shot 6 of 25 out of isolations, 11 of 31 as the pick and roll ball handler. And, you know, we had a lot more success, you know, coming off of screens as the pick and roll screener, as a spot up guy, attacking closeouts, what and whatnot. And of course, he had his moments where he shot the hell out of it off the dribble as well. But I think if he's able to take that next step, and if there's like some playmaking off of that as well, that's when he starts to look like that major steal in the draft. I had him ranked 4th in my draft guide that year. He falls, you know, out of the top 10, which was a bit of a surprise to a lot of people on draft night. I think he's going to be a good player, man. Like, I think at a minimum, he showed enough to feel good about what he's going to be. It's just a matter of, does he have star potential, or is he just going to be like a role player type? And I think it's going to be very similar questions this year with Noah Asenge. I think there's no denying what the idea of what his upside could be. At 6'9", with fluidity off the dribble, the ability to explode at the rim, versatile defensively and all that. But it's similar questions to Buzelis. How good is he as a shooter? What level does he become as a scorer off the dribble? And is he going to become a meme again?
Yeah, this is a bummer, man.
He had a good game.
Awesome game against the Pacers. I think he had 21. But all, he had a really good game. Yeah, he had an awesome game, but a brutal poster, absolutely, from Johnny Furphy. You say, can he score off the dribble? Can he dribble would be the number one question I have. Look, I'm not as deep into the draft game as you are, KOC. But when I saw the Bulls pick Asenge, I was kind of happy because people like you and other draft Knicks out there have him rated as a super high upside guy. And I think that's what the Bulls need right now. But then they show his highlight package and his strengths. And his strengths are, to me, it seemed like were running and dunking at this point. I don't know if he had any dribble moves in his highlight package. I don't know if he was making any shots off the dribble, but he's long, he's athletic, and he's super young. So when I'm feeling my most optimistic, I like to think that the Bulls have the next two Giannises. They've got the next American Giannis in Matas Buzelis, and then the French Giannis in Noah Asenge. Giannis wasn't an all-star as a rookie, nor was he as a second-year player. But once he put on some muscle, once he got some reps handling the ball during the Jason Kidd era, he really popped. So, yeah, I would love to see that from Buzelis this year. More likely, he ends up as like an Andre Kirilenko type, which would be awesome. And then who knows what happens with Asenge. I hope he actually gets a little bit of a chance with the big team, because I foresee him playing a lot with the Windy City Bulls this year, just so he can develop his body and get some serious professional reps against some other NBA-quality players. That being said, I do hope he gets a little bit of a taste playing for the actual Chicago Bulls, and I hope he has some flashes similar to what we saw from Buzelis last year.
Trey, why is he not going to play with the Bulls? Are you trying to give minutes to Pat Williams and Jalen Smith and Okoro? Is that what the Bulls are trying to do instead of feeding minutes to Asenge?
I'm not the coach, KSC. I would be developing the young guys who weigh under 200 pounds. But they're trying to win 38 games and get to the play-in tournament. That's why you got to give Kevin Huerter some run. That's why you got to see if Isaac Okoro can make 2 3-pointers in a game.
Why?
Patrick Williams, man, he might get 10 points in a game. We got to see. This is the year. No, I'm with you. They should be playing the young guys. Vucevic should be gone a long time ago. Kobe White should have been traded last year. They should have traded.
You're
some picks back
trading,
for Caruso.
Right. You're pro trading him.
Unfortunately, yes. Like, I think he's been a pretty good development story for the Bulls. Had a rough start to his career, but grew into his body, got a lot stronger. His handle got a lot tighter. He's a great shooter. I think he's a good player. They really missed the window to trade him for a serious return last year when he had half a season plus this year on his deal. But, you know, realistically, if it's any other team except for the team I grew up rooting for, I'm saying trade these guys, blow it up, get young. Get Cam Boozer so people in Chicago can pull out their Carlos Boozer number 5 jersey and wear it next year. That's what should be happening. I just don't realistically think that's what's going to happen based on the track record of the past 25 years.
I mean, it's pretty amazing how much of a trend this is becoming with the Bulls just hanging on to guys for too long. They did it with Caruso. They did it with Lonzo, for that matter, as well. And they could be doing it with White, where he's an unrestricted free agent a year from now. So value is going to dip. And maybe they decide that they want to keep him, and that's why they ended up deciding to hold on to him. But, yeah, I like some of the young guys on the Bulls. I like even like Ayo Dosunmu. I like a lot of the youth in the team. I like Asenge. I really like Bouzelis. But it's hard to feel a lot of confidence in them as a franchise moving forward, which is disappointing. It's disappointing. The Bulls should be one of the league's best franchises, right? They should be. They're the Chicago freaking Bulls, man.
Yeah, they still sell jerseys. You turn on an F1 race and there's going to be somebody wearing a Bulls hat in every single crowd.
It's still a great crowd, too. I went to a Bulls game last year and the crowd's great. Yes.
Biggest stadium in the NBA. They always sell out. There's always people ready to cheer for the Bulls. They've got a big market. You're going to have to play in the shadow of Michael Jordan. That's just going to have to be somebody takes on the mantle and wants to be the next person to win a championship for the Bulls. That's one thing I love about Bouzelis as a Chicagoland guy. Like, he's fired up to be on the Bulls. He's friends with Caleb Williams on the Bears. I love to see those two young guys like leading the next generation of Chicago sports. But it's been a long time without any serious momentum. You know, when I really am at my saddest, I think, yeah, the Bulls only ever were good because two teams passed on Michael Jordan, and then they had the biggest lottery hit of all time to get Derrick Rose, and that lasted three seasons. So that's my sad Bulls take. But, you know, I still hang the flag down here in Atlanta. I'm the only Bulls flag on the street, and it'll pay off someday.
The Raptors, Bobby Webster's in, Masai Ujiri is out. They didn't do a lot this offseason, changes-wise. Brandon Ingram, their trade deadline acquisition, was really the big change that they did make in the 2025 calendar year. Are you more optimistic or pessimistic about the trajectory of the Toronto Raptors?
I'm pessimistic about the Raptors, and I feel bad because Skeets and Tass are both Raptors fans. You know, I've got a lot of Raptor fans, having lived in Toronto for a couple of years, but it seems to be a downward trajectory, basically, since the COVID season. If we're being honest, you know, the Raptors won the championship in 2019. Kawhi left. They were still pretty solid that next year, even having to play a bunch of their games in Tampa. But with Lowry departing, Van Vliet departing, Siakam departing, I don't necessarily think they've restocked the shelves in a good way. There's a lot of good players on the Raptors, and you can sketch out the idea of an interesting team. But I don't personally think that Barnes and Ingram are going to be a great fit. I guess we'll see. Maybe now is a good time to buy Brandon Ingram stock because we haven't seen him play all that much. His reputation is down kind of since the FIBA World Cup for me when he got benched by Steve Kerr. So I just don't necessarily know how I think this version of the Raptors is going to be anything more than a play-in team, which is kind of a pessimistic take because I think they got a really high payroll for a team that's going to end up in the middle of the weaker conference.
I think this year's a big year for Scottie Barnes because it's the first year of his five-year, 250-ish million dollar contract extension. So he's not no longer on his rookie scale. It's no longer, you know, cute young player. You know, he made an all-star team. He was rookie of the year. It's no longer that. Now the expectations are you taking a leap as a player. And not to mention, as you said, Brandon Ingram. You know, Ingram making $38 million this year, $40 next year, $42 the year after that on a player option. So with Ingram, like, it's now or never, dude. Like it's now or never. You need to put it together. You need to be consistent. You need to be a guy who's willing to do the things that are necessary to play winning basketball, being consistent on defense, taking three-pointers, please. Like, you're capable of doing it. You just need to want to do it. So, like, I think with some of these guys, like, it's going to be necessary. To your point about the Ingram Barnes fit, like Barnes, there's questions about his jumper. Ingram, there's questions about his willingness to shoot. RJ Barrett, there's questions about his jumper ability. They draft Colin Murray-Boyles, who I love as a prospect, elite defensive presence. He is not a shooter as well. You know, Grady Dick hasn't quite come along yet for the Raptors either. So, like, there's so many ifs and question marks for this team. I have a hard time feeling optimistic. At the same time, I do think this is the year where I'm going to figure out where exactly I am, because they were really injured last year. They were the most injured teams in all of the NBA last season. A lot of guys missed time. There's no continuity. And so I think for a young team, it's harder to feel positive progression when you don't have any continuity. But with that said, though, I mean, a lot of this has been a trend for multiple years. It's not like it was just a one-year thing. So to me, I think this is a year of evaluation for the Raptors. They're similar to what you said with the Bulls, wanting to see Bouzelis take a step. With me, it's like, I want to see Scottie Barnes take that step. I want to see if Colin Murray-Boyles can show some competency as a shooter. I want to see if Grady Dick can find consistency. I want to see what Jacoby Walter looks like, you know, entering his second season. So I think this is an evaluation year with the Raptors. But overall, I'd lean pessimistic with the current mix. Inevitably, there's going to be a lot of change. Just a matter of who are you actually going to want to keep from this kind of weird mix going on right now.
They are kind of similar to the Bulls in that there's a lot of players that you're like, oh, that guy's interesting, but you mix them all together and it doesn't seem to make sense, which makes for weird times at the trade deadline when like these are the hottest names out there. And you're like, wait a second, if everybody wants these guys, how come they're so bad when they're all together? But another name that I don't think either of us mentioned is Emmanuel Quickley. And like, that's a huge question mark to me. They paid him right away after the trade with the Knicks when Barrett came over as well. And he's been banged up basically since. He's going to be a huge piece for them as the guy who figures out who's going to be getting the ball. He's going to need to hit some catch and shoot jumpers, because I think you're going to see a lot of ball handling from Barnes and from Ingram. Both of those guys, like you're saying, are, we know you can shoot a three. Are you going to want to take threes? It's just a weird mix of players, most of whom need the ball in their hands to be successful. Sometimes teams can make that work. Usually that is when we're talking about the best of the best players figuring out a way to work together. If it's one-time all-stars competing for touches, I don't know if it works the same way, but this is definitely a year where the Raptors need their big dollar players on the court, because like you're saying, last year, everybody was banged up. They never even got Ingram on the court. He had the longest recovery from a sprained ankle in NBA history, I have to believe. So this year they need Quickley to play. They need Barnes to stay healthy, and they need Ingram out there just so that they can see what sort of a team this can be going forward.
All right, the Blazers, last year they drafted Donovan Clingan, their center in the top five. This year they drafted Yang Hansen, shocked everybody, taking the Chinese center in the middle of the first round. They also have Robert Williams, Time Lord, on the roster. I'm curious, do you think there's any possibility in today's modern NBA style for a team to reach great heights with two non-shooting bigs? Like, is there a chance for the Blazers to be good, like bringing back like the Twin Towers style, with neither of their bigs needing to be able to shoot threes?
I guess it's worth a shot, just because we've seen some teams have success during the playoffs playing double big lineups. You know, the Rockets, most notably with Steven Adams, who's maybe the biggest non-shooter in the NBA, just crushing the glass. I think that that can work for periods of time. I think ultimately you're going to have some offensive skill from your front court positions. The thing that's going against the Blazers, I think there's really two. Number one, they're in the Western Conference. So even if they have a successful year, you have to imagine a team like the Spurs, who finished right near them in the standings, are taking a step forward, not to mention all the teams that were ahead of both Portland and San Antonio. Number two, like, is Denny Avdia their best player? He might be. He had a really good year for him last year, playing both sides of the ball, awesome in transition, drawing fouls, scoring, creating for others. But if Denny Avdia is the best player on your team in the Western Conference, that just puts you behind the eight ball when it comes to comparing talent with every other team that they're going to have to surpass in order to have a successful season, which to me is like making a run at the play-in. I think their goal should be to be like a 7 or 8 seed. And I think that's asking a lot from the Blazers, just because they are early in their development cycle. I think they still got a lot of old guys around. Jeremy Grant still hanging out in Portland. Doesn't seem like a huge piece of their future. This year is about trying to get some playoff-like atmosphere in Portland and hopefully seeing a serious step forward from Scoot Henderson.
Yeah, they win 36 games last year, and you know the West should be even better this year, to your point about some of those young teams improving. And I think the Blazers could be competitive, but what does being competitive in the West mean? Like you can be competitive and still be like the 14th seed in the conference. And so I think with the Blazers, I would say they're probably, at least in my book, they're going to be league pass darlings, because I just love so many of their players. I love watching Tumani Kamara on defense. I love watching Denny Avdija bring the ball up the floor as a 6'8", 6'9" guy. I can't wait to see what Yang Hansen looks like over the duration of a full season. There's just so many guys. I even like watching Matisse Thybulle. Like, if he plays 10 minutes per game, I know I'm going to like watching Matisse Thybulle play defense. So, you know, there's a lot of guys I like watching. And then there's a lot of guys that are interesting. Like, is Scoot Henderson going to take a leap, as you said? Is Shaedon Sharpe going to find consistency as a scorer? Is he going to take a leap? There's a lot of questions about this team that are interesting as well. But I think, you know, where you and I differ with them, Trey, is you mentioned the goal should be kind of like trying to get playoff experience, 7-8. I think the goal should be lotto again. It's like, I want to be in the lottery again if I'm the Blazers, because I think their team has a lot of good talent, a lot of players that could potentially be championship caliber role players, but I don't think they have the guy yet. I don't think they have the guy to lead a championship team yet. And that's in part because Scoot Henderson is looking more like, you know, really good player potentially, but not all-star type of player. And so this year's draft class in 2026 likely, you know, maybe has that guy, AJ DiBonta at BYU, Darren Peterson, point guard at Kansas, or Boozer, who you mentioned earlier, going to Duke. There's some guys that could be this star of a championship team. And so to me, I think that's going to be the number one priority for the Blazers, is be competitive, but don't make the play-in. Don't make the play-in. I want to be in the lottery.
You're absolutely right. That's what they should be doing. For a young team, the Blazers have an identity. They were a defense-first team last year, and they've got a lot of good defense-first role players. Even bringing in Jrue Holiday, I think, kind of speaks to that sort of team build that they're going for. But since Scoot hasn't panned out the way the Blazers assumed he would when they drafted him third, you're right that they are missing the big centerpiece for their team that's really going to drive things, especially on the offensive side of the court. But they're not trying to lose, KOC. They're pointing upwards. They had their down period at the end of the Damian Lillard tenure there, the end of his era, when he was, you know, missing about half the season, and they were trying to get high in the draft lottery. It worked out. They got the third pick. The third pick just hasn't turned out as perfectly as it can be. So would it benefit them to be in the lottery again? Absolutely. And maybe they get the best of both worlds. We've seen that happen recently, where you finish 8th to 10th in lottery odds and somehow you get bumped up to the number one spot. I do like watching the Blazers as well. They've got a great broadcast. They're a fun team to watch for the West Coast games. But I can't totally endorse saying these guys need to suck this year. They're trying to win. They got young guys, even though they do still have old guys.
Yeah, they have old guys and young guys. But look, yeah, I'm not saying they need to be a 19-win team. But even if they have the 8th best odds, like that's a 35-ish win team, similar to last season. I almost don't think the Mavericks, they win 39 games last year. They move up to number one. You can be close to average and still be in the, you know, top 10, top 11 odds because of the Western Conference being as stacked as it is. So I think with the Blazers, I just don't want to make the playoffs this year, is what I would say. I want to compete. I want to have like a lot of like exciting wins where we upset a team. I want to feel like my guys are making progress. I want to feel optimistic about the team, and that requires being competitive, but I don't think it always requires actually getting the W in the box score. I think you can feel equally as good sometimes about the team, because if they end up with the 7th best odds or the 8th best odds, it could have been like a super exciting year where you feel so optimistic about the future of the team, even if it means only winning 32 games or so. Because at the end of the day, it's about the process of the things more so than the results at the end of the day for these young teams. And so I think for the Blazers, it would be really beneficial if they're able to get one more top four pick. And then Dame comes back the following year, and you get a nice young team and another young star. To me, that's the ideal situation for the Blazers, rather than sneaking into the play-in and maybe making the playoffs as the 7 or 8 seed and then just getting demolished in the first round. That's just what happened to Memphis this year instead of Dallas. Like, Dallas moves up to number one. They get Cooper Flagg. Memphis makes the playoffs. They get smoked. And, you know, I think between those teams, you probably feel better about the future of the Mavericks despite trading Luka, because they got Cooper Flagg rather than the Grizzlies. So I don't know. That's sort of just my own philosophy. I know,
hey, the Mavs made the play-in tournament last year. Maybe that's the new meta.
Yeah,
finishing the 10th seed, losing the play-in, so you still get your lottery odds, then get bumped up, because then you have the role players and you're adding the star to it. So, you know, not too long ago, we were trashing the Bulls KOC, but it seems that they've hit on the perfect strategy. Be right in the middle and then get super lucky. That's all you need. A perfect roll of the dice.
That is the play for sure.
We'll be right back.
Final category, trying to take the next step. Minnesota Timberwolves. What's more likely for the Timberwolves? Kevin Durant ends up the one that got away, or it becomes a blessing in disguise to move forward without KD?
That's a great question. One that got away, maybe it's Nikhil Alexander Walker going to the Hawks, because basically they couldn't figure out a way to pay him, and Julius Randle got a better deal here in Atlanta, and he was a vital player to them. I don't know what to make of the Timberwolves. Like, I thought they had a down first two-thirds of the year, basically, last year. And then Julius Randle comes back, looks healthy, and looks like exactly the player they were hoping for when they traded Karl-Anthony Towns. He was good enough as a secondary creator to kind of puncture the defense and create shots for others. He played a really unselfish style of basketball in the playoffs. He was like going at LeBron. He was going at Draymond Green and outplaying both of those guys before ultimately coming up short in the conference finals. But both times that the Timberwolves have gone to the conference finals, I haven't necessarily thought that they were going to end up there. So maybe they're a team that can go to the next level in the playoffs with their defensive identity and Anthony Edwards going to the next level. I do think it would be helpful to have a more reliable second option than Julius Randle, just because he can be an up and down kind of player. And I think you have to start being concerned about when Mike Conley finally takes the last step of his career. And maybe that's this year. There were times last year when he wasn't looking great, and there were times last year when he was giving them exactly what they needed. So the Timberwolves, to me, are a team right now that I'm not totally sure where to slot them. I'm impressed with the way that they're able to perform in the playoffs. I do think their team got a little bit worse this offseason, while the rest of the Western Conference got a little bit better. And I do think it is pretty interesting that one of the teams that's going to be vying for second place in the West behind the Thunder is the Rockets, who were able to make the move for Kevin Durant. So from that standpoint, you could definitely see that coming back to haunt them when, you know, it's KD versus McDaniels, and it's not going the way Anthony Edwards is hoping it would go.
Yeah, I think you mentioned McDaniels. He's one of those guys that you had wished could have taken that leap into becoming that second star behind Anthony Edwards, but he's just more, you know, elite defensive player, but more role player on offense. He hasn't become that guy for them. As Mike Conley has declined as a player, it's only increasing the pressure on Rob Dillingham, who didn't get a lot of opportunities last year, and then on Terrence Shannon, especially with the loss of Nikhil Alexander Walker, for him to do more of what we saw with the flashes in the postseason. I think aside from Anthony Edwards taking a leap, another leap, you know, he takes one every year, it seems like, it's going to come down to Rob Dillingham and Terrence Shannon. Is this team actually addition by subtraction? Not like nothing against Nikhil Alexander Walker, but simply because of the minutes and touches and opportunity it opens up for Dillingham and Shannon. I think that's the key question with this Minnesota roster. But ultimately, you know, it's still going to come down to Ant. It's still going to be, does Anthony Edwards replicate what he did last year as an improved three-point shooter? Does he come out and shoot the hell out of it again, or does that look like a outlier year? Does he prove that? And also, does he take a leap as a playmaker? Does he take a similar leap as a passer and as a creator for others in the same way that he shockingly did as a shooter last season? And so if Ant does that, he goes from what, the sixth or seventh best player in the NBA to, you know, top three, top four in that conversation, if he's able to make dramatic progress as a playmaker. That is the biggest thing for Minnesota. But I think Dillingham and Shannon, I hope to God Chris Finch plays those guys this year. If he continues still to lean on veterans instead of playing them, I'm going to be so disappointed. I'm sure Tim Connelly, their general manager, would be as well, considering the moves that he made to kind of like force minutes to those young guys. But I think those are the keys from Minnesota, Trey. And to get back to the question, I think it's more likely KD's the one that got away. I just think KD would have been perfect for this team. He's perfect for what they needed. They could have played with different big lineups still with him. They could have played with versatility, would have given them the second star that they needed. They wouldn't have obviously lose a lot defensively without Gobert, but you change who you are. I still think you can be really good defensively. But for it to be a blessing in disguise, it's going to have to be Dillingham, Shannon really coming along this year and next year as well.
Yeah, I liked the Durant fit for the Timberwolves too. I think it was going to be tough to find the perfect team for him. Maybe Houston is the right team, a team that's in the mix right now and trying to take the next step. I think the Timberwolves are there too, where, you know, they're a mix of older and younger players that's still Ant's team, but they've got vets around them. They're trying to win. I like the idea of KD there. I think it would have been cool, especially since those two guys get along really well. I do buy Ant's shooting. Ever since there was that clip of him, I think it was FIBA World Cup. Maybe it was for the Olympics, but he's shooting corner threes. And since he's shooting with the FIBA ball, you can see the rotation and it just looks so perfect. And then he comes out and shoots 40% from three on 10 attempts. I buy that. You're right. The playmaking is the next step for him. He can be a good playmaker, but I felt like, especially in the playoffs, it seemed like he had trouble balancing when I should be a playmaker and when I should be Anthony Edwards, the scorer out there. He doesn't have to be Chris Paul or even Mike Conley as a playmaker, but look at what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is as a player. He can score anytime he wants to, but he gets his teammates involved quite a bit. He added the jumper and the Thunder became awesome. So once Ant finds the mix, that's how the Timberwolves take the next step. And the young guys are definitely a question mark. I think Shannon will play. He's kind of in his athletic prime right now as an older rookie last season. He actually got an opportunity and produced during the regular season and even in the playoffs. Dillingham, I have more questions about, being so young, being such a slight frame. I don't know how he's going to handle the physicality of the playoffs, which is when they would really need him as a secondary ball handler. But the Timberwolves made a big bet on him, trading away a future pick that went to the Spurs. That could have been valuable, or that could still end up being valuable. So they need to see what they have in Dillingham. He needs at least a little bit of a leash here in year two. And I think he should get one with Alexander Walker being gone, Conley likely taking a step back. There's an opportunity for him. I don't know what it's going to look like, but if he can play and if he can defend, then that's going to be huge for Minnesota.
All right, final question here. Does this retooled Hawks team give Trae Young his best chance to lead Atlanta to the finals?
I think so. This is the best built team around Trae Young from a defenders, wings, shooting standpoint. The Hawks have it all at the 2, 3, 4, even at the 5 position with Porzingis. The question, I think, will be health. Jalen Johnson has been banged up for the majority of his NBA career. Even in college, he wasn't totally healthy. We know Porzingis is going to miss time. Trae has generally been healthy for the Hawks. I think he was awesome last year, playing the most unselfish style of basketball he ever has, especially when Johnson was healthy. We saw Dyson Daniels take a step forward. I don't know what he looks like as an offensive player, but we know he's great defensively. So the Hawks, to me, are like 8 or 9 deep. They're really flexible. They've got a lot of youth. They've got a lot of versatility. They've got guys who can cover for Trae defensively. I think they got better in the front court, bringing in Porzingis. The question will be, who's healthy for this team come playoff time? And if any of their front court guys miss time during the regular season, is it one at a time? Like, I think they could survive a Jalen Johnson absence a lot better this season than they did last season. But if it's Johnson and Porzingis happen to miss 15 games at the same time, that could be bad for the Hawks. But I'm optimistic about what Atlanta has built, especially considering how dire it was looking during the DeJounte Murray short-lived experiment when they shipped off a lot of their future picks as well, picks that they still own the Spurs, but that are not looking as bad now that the Hawks have A, gotten better, and B, did the deal with the Pelicans. So the Hawks can go full speed ahead trying to win, knowing they don't have their pick, but they're still going to likely get a lottery pick going forward. So I think for one summer on the job, Ansi Salah did an awesome job. I think the Hawks have to be one of the big winners of the offseason. And yeah, now the pressure to me is completely on Trae Young. We've given you your best team on both sides of the ball. You're in your prime as a player. You're an awesome offensive hub. Let's see if this can turn into team success or if it somehow equals 41 wins again.
I think you nailed it completely. I mean, I agree with every word of you. The pressure now turns to Trae Young. Can you elevate this team in the same way that you have elevated players in the past as a shot creator, as a player? But can you do it in a winning context? Can you balance between toggle between scoring and playmaking in an efficient manner? Because that's the one thing about Trae. I mean, as great as he is as a passer, his scoring efficiency has dipped a lot in recent years compared to his, you know, best season of his career in what, a 21-22 season, where he had the best season of his career. Since then, he has not met that efficiency as a scorer from three-point range or from mid-range or from at the rim for that matter. And so with Trae, can he have the best season of his career? And can he elevate this team, continuing to put his all into defense? I give him credit there. He has improved his effort defensively. He's still a liability because he's tiny on that end, but he's at least competing. And now he has the right supporting pieces around him. The Hawks have front court flexibility. You know, Okongwu as well continues to get better each season. So you put him with Kristaps Porzingis and you have different ways you can play out there. You have Jalen Johnson, hopefully stays healthy all year. I'm excited to see what they look like, and not to mention Ricochet entering year two after some of the flashes in the second half of the season, especially Dyson Daniels, his second year with Atlanta after his great year last year. So I think with Atlanta, I'm optimistic about what they can be. Are they finals contenders? I don't think so, compared to New York or Cleveland or even Orlando for that matter. But I think they're going to be really competitive, and there's an outside possibility that they make a deeper run. But I do think it's their best chance. And the pressure is indeed on Trae Young, as you said, Trae. Last thing I want to talk to you about, July 13th, 2024, Las Vegas, Nevada. Where does this day rank in the history of your life?
In the history of my life? That's a tough one. I'll put it in the top 50 days of my life. I think that's still pretty good. I'm old, KLC. I'm 41 years old. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen, going to the Sphere. I got to give you a lot of credit. I would have been standing on the floor looking up at the screen if it weren't for you giving me the hint, say, go sit in the second section, the 200 levels. And it was perfect. I turned 40 in 2024. So this was my 40th birthday trip. My wife flew out to meet me for Summer League and really to go to the Sphere. And, you know, they play three shows. They play a different show every time. I've seen them quite a few times. You're going to hear songs you want to hear, and you're going to definitely not hear songs that you want to hear. But for whatever reason, on this July 13th, they played every single song I wanted to hear and every song that I wanted to hear that I hadn't heard them play yet. And they played them all like in order. And I was going crazy, and I just couldn't stop saying to my wife, I can't believe we're here right now. This worked out so perfectly. It was meant to be. And then the next song was started. I can't believe they're playing this song right now. I can still feel the sensations in my body just talking about it.
It's a beautiful place, man. I saw Dead & Company that same weekend. I think the day before you, maybe, or something like that. It's a special venue. It's a special experience seeing Dead & Company play at the Sphere. And you know, I'm a, as you said, a mere man rather than a deadhead. Like you're a true deadhead. I'm a mere man.
That's all right, Dan. See, this this project has united the mere men and the deadheads, because like you said, I wouldn't consider myself a John Mayer fan, but after I'd seen Dead & Company play enough times, when John Mayer came to Atlanta, came to State Farm Arena on his solo acoustic tour, I was seated, KOC, just watching him. I went. My body was a wonderland. I was running through the halls of my high school throughout the evening. He was just holding the audience in the palm of his hand, just one man and an acoustic guitar and occasionally jokes from John Mayer. So, yeah, I guess I'm more Mayer-pilled than I ever have been, and it's all because of the Dead.
Hey, I mean, it's pretty cool to see, you know, different generations of music fans get blended, because I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, you say you're what, 41 now? There's people in their 50s and 60s and even 70s at these Dead shows. And then you see John Mayer solo and they're like, oh my God, this guy is unbelievable. And then they go see him live and it's similar to me as a really angsty classic rock snob as a teenager. There was a time in my life where I didn't like John Mayer. I was like, oh, he's just all pop. And then Continuum, the album, came out in 2006. And this is at a time where I'm like all about Pink Floyd and Jimi Hendrix. And I'm like, oh, he covers Jimi Hendrix, Bold as Love, on this album. I'm like, oh yeah, I actually like John Mayer and I love that album. And over the years, he's come out with a lot of great albums since then, Born and Raised especially. And with John Mayer, you kind of learn to appreciate a guy like him who's covered a ton of different genres. And I'm sure he probably has a lot of older fans because of Dead & Company at this point, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. My first exposure to John Mayer was much the same to you. I think at one point he went on a tour that he called like the Baggy Pants Tour. Or something like that. Basically, like, I'm the anti The Strokes. Those guys wear their skinny jeans. They look like rock stars. I'm just up here, a frat boy playing acoustic guitar. I wasn't feeling that at all. But then I turned into an old man. And I was like, oh, this is actually kind of pleasant.
Dead & Company, man. They played recent shows at Golden Gate Park, right? This year, a couple days ago, a couple weeks ago, maybe.
Yeah,
right?
I took my whole family to the final tour in 2023, and since then they've done two residencies at the Sphere and then these three shows at Golden Gate Park. But they're like, look, we're only performing in one place, technically not a tour, so you got me, John.
good point. How many times have you seen them?
Six or seven, probably, at this point.
And probably more if they tour again or play more shows.
Well, if they would have been there at Summer League, I would have been there once again, but instead they switched it out for the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, and you didn't go to that? You didn't see the Backstreet Boys?
If it was NSYNC, I would have been there.
Oh.
NSYNC, I would have gladly gone to, but Backstreet Boys just didn't work out for us time-wise, and look, if I wanted to make it work, I'm sure we could have made it work, but I wasn't quite as enthused.
You know what amazed me? How few Backstreet Boys songs that I actually knew. I know the hits, but there's a lot of songs where I'm like, I don't know what this is. I'm just enjoying the visuals.
Yeah, exactly. I can tell you the NSYNC deep cuts, but the Backstreet Boys album songs, I don't know those ones quite as well. Like you, I would know the hits. I would want it that way. I would love to see that up on the Sphere for sure, but some of the slower, the ballads, the songs that the real fans know don't appeal to me quite as much. But look, I'm sure they put on a great show.
Yeah, it was a good time. I had fun. I always have fun at the Sphere. I'll see anybody there. Hopefully, would love to see Dead & Company again there. That was amazing. I think it was my favorite experience at the Sphere was seeing Dead & Company. Best use of the visuals, and also it's jamming, you know, improvising. It's just there's something different there compared to the structured songs that you see other bands play there. But yeah, Dead & Company. I got my Dead & Co shirt on. You got tie dye on.
Looks great.
You're Trey Kirby. Thank you for joining me today, man.
KOC, great talking with you. I look forward to you praising the Bulls throughout this season as they battle for 38 wins.
Praising or criticizing, we'll see how it turns out. Where can people find yourself?
Yeah, I see. I've noticed it's been mostly criticizing for the past 10 years, KOC. I don't know why it's gone that way, but you can follow No Dunks. Our YouTube channel is the best way to watch or listen to the show, but you can find our podcasts on any sort of podcasting platform. We're in the middle of a Jurassic Park run right now since nothing's happening in the NBA.
Trey, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Really fun. Thanks for having me.
B. Big thank you to Trey Kirby for joining me on today's episode. Make sure you follow them at No Dunks. Big thanks to Emmy Franks for producing today's episode and to Father John Misty for the music. We'll be back again later this week. Have a good week, everybody. Talk soon.